Hello, everyone. You might have seen a write-up of our book in LA Weekly. They said that Death by Umbrella, the 100 weirdest horror movie weapons, was rich with context and analysis, gruesome yet all in good fun. We're equal parts thrilled and humbled. Be sure to pick up a print or Kindle copy from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Bear Manor Media. That's Bear as in the Revenant Bear, not naked. Anyway, on with the show.
This evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right? All right! They're coming! The rats are coming! Thousands of them!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord! It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Hey, wait. There's something weird here.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
It's here, right here. Hello? I brought Sandy to see you. This is Sandy. You see, there's four of them in there. I told you.
I can't see anything. It's just a big hole.
No, come here. Come here, come on.
No, no, no.
They're pigs. They're pigs or warthogs or something. They fell in or the ground collapsed or something.
No.
Let's go.
No, they're trollogs. I read about them in a book. They're from prehistoric times.
Jamie, that's the...
Downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 121, The Pit. This is a sociopath in the making story. We're usually concern ourselves with the end result of, let's say, childhood trauma that expresses itself in the likes of Maniac and your typical slasher movie. This has an antagonist who's 12 years old. That's a little bit unique, and this is a really interesting take and interesting subgenre of horror. The killer kid.
Well, I mean, when we talk about killer kids, I mean, that's not something that's new in horror. I mean, this came out in 81, yes. How many other killer kids have we had? We had Damien and the Omen. We had...
We have killer babies.
Killer
but
babies.
But for the most part, it's your lone wolf roaming the streets of an urban core.
Well, it's interesting because how I discovered this movie and what made me want to seek it out and podcast it is I'm actually going through a book right now written by Brian Collins called Horror Movie a Day. And what he does is he suggests a different horror movie for every day of the year. This is a spin-off of his website that he had going on for 6 years. And every month is a different theme. For example, January is Asian horror, February is slasher movies, and I'm currently reading March, which is Killer Kids. So he's got an entire month devoted to Killer Kid movies. March 5th, The Pit. And reading this, I just said, man, I gotta see this movie. He calls it just completely wrong, batshit insane. Actually, it does have a chapter called Batshit Crazy Horror. That's in May. But yeah, no, The Pit, really, I read this thing, and I was like, whoa, I gotta see this movie. But I mean, we got movies here like Orphan, which came out in 2009. That was really good. We got a movie by Lamberto Bava called Ghost Son. I've yet to see that one. And, of course, it's alive is in here, so there's your killer baby. And, yeah, lots and lots of killer kids. What about Killer in the Corn?
Oh, yes.
That's March 21st. So Killer Kids is nothing new, but there's something very interesting about this particular kid. His name is Jamie Benjamin. And when you talk about the makings of a sociopath, oftentimes it's some sort of childhood trauma that turns you into a sociopath.
Yeah, the infamous McDonald triad. Bedwetting, fires, what is it? It's completely lost on... Oh, of course, animal torture.
Killing animals.
Yeah, okay. And some have said, I guess, that this is overstated in its influence on producing future killers, but these are some of the three hallmarks. Again, there's plenty of them.
And, wait, there's bedwetting, setting fires, and killing animals.
And killing animals, yeah. And this was...
I only did one of those three.
Same. Yeah. But we won't admit which one.
Well, I won't admit it because I don't want people thinking...
Bedwetting?
No. I don't want people thinking I wet the bed or I killed animals. Well, I did kill insects, but I mean, okay, that's bad. But anyway.
With a magnifying glass?
Yeah, among other things. But no, I mean, I did set fires when I was young.
Wow. So right here. But then this fell out of favor, and there was an article in Psychology Today saying this is... can be dispensed with because this has just become part of the zeitgeist, but it's really not true. And there's other factors that lead to it, but it's still interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because you say a killer kid, but I mean, he's not really a killer. He doesn't kill anyone by his own handiwork.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really bizarre movie. He kills people by luring them to this pit, which is somewhere out there in the forest, and it makes me laugh because I'm thinking to myself, in this town, like, does nobody ever take a walk in the forest?
Yeah.
It's this gigantic pit.
Yeah.
This massive crater in the ground that's so deep that down there at the very bottom live a race of, like
aardvark, like weird
creatures. With yellow eyes that hunch over. They almost look like little hedgehogs until they actually come out and you see they're a lot bigger. That are ultimately described as trolls or troglogs or whatever. And
much to the chagrin of the screenwriter, he said, come on, people understand what troglodyte is. Even the kid who seems bright, even if not academically, he's well-read, troglodyte. And she, his babysitter, who we'll come to discuss in the film, reads the dictionary definition of troglodyte, which he already knows. But anyway, a trogalog, it sounds like a travelogue, but anyway, is this creature in question. So,
yeah, and at the bottom of this pit are these hungry, carnivorous troglogs, and he lures people to this pit in order to keep these monsters fed. But there's so much more wrong about this kid besides just the fact that he lures people to their certain death at the bottom of a gigantic pit that no one else seems to notice. Well, for one thing, I mean, you know, when you mentioned that McDonald's triad, I've never heard of that before.
That's interesting.
Psychology? Interesting. I think bullying is something that's, you know, has always been a factor in people growing up with deep-seated resentment.
Very true.
And now, more than ever, bullying is something that's, you know, in the public consciousness. Everybody is aware of, you know, the effects of bullying.
Yeah, and the high-profile school shootings related to that.
Now, I mean, it's interesting, because when I was in school, I was on both sides. I was bullied, and I was a bully.
Yeah, I think that's the case for most people at different times in their life. Mm-hmm. Hopefully... at least that you can experience being on the receiving end, and that's as opposed to, I don't know, people who are just on the one end.
Yeah, see, for me it was the reverse. I mean, I was bullied because I was weak, and then when I got a bit stronger, I'm like, okay, now I'm gonna show them what's what. And I became a bully of other people that I perceived. Yeah. So there was no lessons learned when I was young. But
and it's weird because luckily
I grew a bit more wisdom as I grew older, but what have you. Sorry to interrupt.
It's interesting how it manifests, you know, according to gender, too, because there's the stereotype or maybe the perception and probably the reality that the women who do it as girls, they do it in a catty way, and they backbite one another and talk about one another, and then the guys do it in a physical way with karate kicks and punches in the face and noogies and whatever else. But guys, in my experience, were just as backbiting and just as conniving and backstabbing. So it ran both ways too, and now women are becoming more violent too. So
interesting. And yeah. The jury's still out as to what is more emotionally scarring.
Taunts
or physical abuse. I can almost argue that, there's that old adage, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Well, no, I think it's the other way around.
Yeah, I agree.
That, you know, bones do heal, but emotional scars take a long time to Scab over.
I do recall punching out a kid in the 8th grade, and his mother started driving him right to the front of the school, like after this fight. And then I also recall getting my ass beat and looking through the grass sideways as some guy was pounding on me, like sitting on my back, pound, pound, pound. So yeah, the trials and tribulations of youth and being this kid's age. And Jamie in question here is what, 11, 12 years old?
He's 12 years old. And so what adds to this movie, what adds to the creepiness factor is the fact that he's, not only is he bullied, and I mean, this guy, I mean, there's a girl in the neighborhood named Abigail, and he goes up to her to try and extend an olive branch of friendship. He goes, "Why don't you go back where you came from, funny person?" And later on, she sees him and goes, "Wow, if it isn't clumsy stupid." I mean, so, and there's another part where he goes up to a guy and asks to join his club, and he gets punched in the face, just like without even any sort of real provocation. Like, "May I join your club?" Bam, punch him in the face. But you know what? I gotta say, I would have probably punched him in the face too, because this is a creepy little kid. Not only is he not, I mean, in many ways, he's developing the way he should at the age of 12, and that leads to a lot of these sort of psychosexual elements in this film, which would render it not anything that would be touched upon today or made today.
Which is why I suggested this be remade erroneously. Even though this is something I would want to see remade, but it will never happen. You're right.
But, so there's that. I mean, he's coming of age sexually. He's found with nudie magazines, art books, depicting the female form, what have you. But then in other ways, there's a lot of things about him that are not appropriate. For example, he has a teddy bear.
Yeah, age inappropriate by this time.
Exactly.
Where it's his imaginary. Well, not really. Yeah, I guess he talks to it, and it answers back. So it's his kind of imaginary friend, Teddy.
Nobody at the age of 12 should be sleeping with a teddy bear. Hmm. Not only does he sleep with a teddy bear, he talks to it, and it does talk back, but the voice is pretty much a kid's voice. So we're thinking to ourselves, okay, well, this is just a kid's demented imagination, right? And Teddy is sort of like the devil on his shoulder telling him to do these bad things. However, there's one scene where Teddy's head just completely moves on its own volition.
Yeah.
And
very child's play.
Yeah, exactly. But that was never followed up. So you really don't know. Like, is Teddy
sentient?
Active
and interesting.
You mentioned earlier that he has a babysitter. We should mention how that came about, because he's got these parents that are sort of at the end of their tether. Mm-hmm. They don't know what to do with this kid who's being,
rambunctious and destructive, and they've got a revolving door of babysitters who have not made the cut, or they've said, "I'm out of here, I can't deal with this little brat here."
And they happen to be going away for an extended period of time.
Quite a long time. The entire duration of this movie, actually. A strange conceit.
Yeah. They just want to wash their hands of this stupid kid.
Yeah. Anyway. The longest stint of a babysitter in any horror film, or any film altogether.
Yeah, and they hire a psychology student, I believe she's a grad student, named Sandra. And she's to become his live-in babysitter, his nanny, his caregiver. Mm-hmm. But not only that, but she also becomes the object of his desire in many ways. And although she is, and this is a quote from the movie, double his age, he asks her to tell him a bedtime story. She bathes him, which is
both age inappropriate at this point. Yeah.
An exceedingly creepy scene where he says, "Sandra, can you wipe my back?" And she goes, "Well, I think you're a little too old for that." "Well, I'll all be covered up in suds." "Okay, you better be covered up in
those
suds."
That's what makes it inappropriate.
And as she's bathing him and soaping down his back, he even says something along the lines of, "Sandra, why does mommy like to bathe me so?" So there's all of that, and he makes no bones about the fact that he's lusting after this Sandra. At one point, she's taking a shower, he walks in and writes on the mirror in lipstick, "I love you." At another point, she's sleeping, and
he's watching her sleep, and her breast her escapes from her negligee, he's just sitting there at the foot of her bed, just leering, really.
And every time he's admonished for these perverted acts, but why? What did I do wrong? So there's the burgeoning sexuality, there's the bullying, and then there's the weird sort of infantilization tendencies that he has, like such as the teddy bear and being needed to be suckered with a bedtime story and being
And also asking his little friend Abigail there to ride her bike, this little girl's bike, a tiny little bike. Like, he has no, the poor kid has no cohorts to hang around with. It's just he's interacting with friends. Adults and younger girls, and he's got nobody. Mm. And it's very sad.
When Sandra asks him if he misses having friends, he goes, well, I have Teddy. So, yeah, this is all the makings of a real fucked up kid. But, you know, this movie could have been a very insightful, thorough examination of the messed up psyche of a preteen, you know, entering his pubescent years. But it just goes well beyond that into something just totally bizarre with this pit. Because this is not a fiction of his imagination. There is a pit in the forest, a secret, to which he does at one point tell Sandra and shows her the pit, and inside the pit are these chuggalocks.
Yeah, and but it could be a figment of his imagination, and I guess the filmmaker wanted to make it a little more ambiguous, and then once it got in the hands of producers, a bunch of tweaks were made, not the least of which was making the kid 12 instead of 9, as it was originally intended. But really, you would lack all the sexual dynamics that really make this effective had you made it an 8-year-old, who you could see more readily accept being bathed than a preteen there. But anyway, this is not even about the psychosexual development of a kid, a pit. And the kid takes it upon himself to be the caretaker to these pit dwellers. And he goes to the butcher shop with notes that are ostensibly from his mother to, I guess,
procure meat.
Yeah. Ostensibly for a backyard barbecue or something. Yeah, he says it has to feed 5 to 6 people.
That was a hilarious line where the butcher goes, that's a lot of meat. And he goes, oh, well, it's for 5 people.
Yes. And so he takes all this food stuff over into the middle of the forest and dumps it down the hole for these things to gnaw on. So he's got this relationship with them because apparently he feels that if they don't get fed, then they're going to emerge from the pit to do further damage, which is bizarre. Mm-hmm. But considering it also at one point he says they're trapped down there too, so you know, these two competing things.
Yeah, and ultimately his limited means only go so far when it comes to procuring meat from the butcher shop, and he's down to his last 62 cents. And I believe this is money he actually stole from Sandra too.
Mm-hmm.
And then he realizes, okay, well, I still have to keep feeding these troglodogs. So what am I gonna do? Let's feed them the people that wronged me, and there are a lot of people that wronged him. So, as fucked up, creepy, weird as this kid is, describe this kid. I mean, he's blonde. He's got
just dead eyes, a blonde bowl cut. Yeah, he just relates to people on a very strange level. He's a little bit. He's into science. Mm-hmm. Some review sites have described him as exhibiting signs of autism as well.
I was
going to
say, if this movie was made today, they would probably say that this kid is somewhat on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. And even before he's avenging those who've wronged him or attempting to feed the beasts, as it were, in there, he plays with, who is it, the town librarian, who is the aunt of young Abigail, and he sets up a scheme whereby he records himself as a kidnapper making ransom demands from her and claiming that he's kidnapped her niece.
Mm-hmm.
And in exchange for telling her where the niece is, and so she'll be released, she has to doff her clothes while he sits there at the window with his Polaroid snapping pictures of her. And the dynamic of sex between this little kid and these adults, like, they do film it in a way where clearly they were in different locales when they were doing this, because it makes you wonder how they would do it today. Mm. But again, there's a two-shot of the boob, the babysitter, sleeping and him staring at her, and the same with the shower, and same with the blackmail subject here, where he's taking the Polaroid snaps, and my God, this is one little messed up youngin' here.
Exactly, and when he then gets this notion to start feeding his enemies to the troglodogs, this results in just a lot of hilarity, because not only are these people in the town oblivious to the fact that there's a gigantic crater to the center of the earth where these, you know, paleontologic monsters live, but they're oblivious to the fact that, like, when they're there, they pretty much walk right into the pit.
Yeah.
Whether it be Abigail, whether it be Sandra's football-playing boyfriend.
Yeah,
whether,
go along. You know, he's running for a pass, and the football sails over his head. He dives, and into the pit he goes. This is a big pit. It's got to be probably 5 meters across, at least 12 to 15 feet. Yeah. Or, okay, 20 feet even. Who knows?
And my favorite pit feeding was the old lady. I believe her name might have been Mrs. Oliver, or was it? Or
I think so. Yeah.
And she's in a wheelchair, and she's a nasty old biddy. She says things to him like, "Oh, your parents should do something to you, or what have you." And at one point, he says, "Oh, do you mind if I put you in your wheelchair?" And he's racing her down into the forest, and he stops just about, I would say, a foot away from the pit. And instead of pushing her into the pit, she just falls off the wheelchair into the pit.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Not even to conceal the evidence. He should have at least thrown the wheelchair into the pit.
Ultimately, he runs out of people to throw into the pit because he does have some sort of moral conscience. He only wants to throw the bad people into the pit. And then he realizes that the care and feeding of these monsters can no longer be his responsibility.
Yes.
So he lowers a rope and unleashes the monsters.
Not a good move, yeah.
No.
And then we should also mention that he at one point tried to get a dairy cow into the pit, but it was not...
He tried to drag an entire... I forgot about that. The entire dairy cow.
And the thing would have none of it, so yeah. I guess he could not drag the thing through the endless fields and then through through the bike trail and then through the path and then into the clearing, through the forest, into the hole.
Mm-hmm. So, this movie is... beyond a shadow of a doubt, one of the most ridiculous films I've ever seen in my life.
For sure.
Ridiculously entertaining. But the reason why I say it's ridiculous is because it really does not know what it wants to be. I mean, on the one hand, you have this examination of, maturation of a prepubescent child and this creepy sexual longing. That can make for a horror film in amongst itself. But then this... imaginary friend, this teddy bear who he talks to, and again, you're thinking, well, this is just a figment of his imagination. Then we see Teddy move on his own volition. By the way, in other markets, this film was actually titled Not the Pit, but Teddy.
Yes.
And then we got the pit. So there's all these weird elements, incongruous elements that come together to make something that could only have been made, 25 years ago. You say that this film should be remade or rebooted?
I would like to reboot it because I didn't like the final third, but I was riveted by the first two-thirds. Mm-hmm. And I thought where it... I think probably his original conception would have been, again, to make the pit ambiguous as to whether it existed or not. But when he brought the babysitter over to the pit and then divulges what's down there to her... I thought where this thing would be going is that there's no pit at all, which, I don't know, I guess, is that more conventional way of storytelling, that you'd expect other people not to see the pit in the same way they can't see a child's imaginary friend? That's what I would have preferred, in a way, keep it ambiguous, and yet he keeps killing somehow, but maybe the pit is... something that it's in his imagination, but he still kills. So I'm not sure. That's how I would do it.
It's
probably.
Funny, as you're saying this, I'm listening to you, but I'm also the gears are turning. I'm thinking to myself, maybe this is not so incongruous at all, or maybe I'm giving credit to the screenwriter, credit doesn't belong. But what is a pit? It's a chasm, right? Mm-hmm. In Freudian terms.
Yeah, you don't have to. Yeah.
Yeah. What is it?
Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Yeah, but this pit is not just a pit. Yeah.
Yeah. So here we have.
It's a manifestation of his anxiety about sex.
But now I'm thinking to myself, I don't think the screenwriters intend that whatsoever. But I think what I'm doing is I'm attributing some sort of subtext to the pit.
Oh, we're projecting because obviously the filmmaker, the screenwriter wanted younger kids, and that would have completely removed. The element that was so appealing to us. So take an 8-year-old, all this stuff goes by the wayside.
Yeah, because here he is, with this burgeoning sexuality, and there's a pit in the forest with these trouble dogs, or whatever the hell they're called, lurking at the bottom, and he's alternately afraid of them, and yet fascinated by them. And that can represent, a young man's fascination about sex, because... when we're that age, we kind of want to explore it, but we're also sort of afraid. So, fuck, maybe this movie is a lot more...
Well, I would not have jettisoned the pit at all, but I didn't care for the depiction of the creatures, and nor did, I guess, the screenwriter, too. Because, again, they look like hedgehogs, groundhogs, aardvarks, they're little furry... ridiculous yellow-eyed creatures that detract a little bit away from the thing. I think they could have not shown it and just shown maybe red eyes or done something a little more on that line.
And near the end of the movie when they escape the pit. And
yeah, then it gets worse.
It's like getting all humanoids from the deep on this thing.
Speaking of a film with lots of sexual undertones, yeah.
And then it starts to remind me of, the monster in The Legend of Boggy Creek 2.
Yeah.
And the legend continues, you know? So, yeah, it's a weird movie, this one. Weird, but I would say fascinating and worth seeing. So I'm going to thank Brian Collins for the recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have to ask you, what did you learn?
Okay, I learned that this is a kid with some serious lack of discipline in his life, with completely absentee helicopter parents, however you want to call it. These people have washed their hands of this kid vis-a-vis his upbringing in its entirety. There's an early scene where we get a first glimpse into this kid's perversions, because that's what they are. There's one thing becoming more sexual and exploring that. There's another when you claim to drop your napkin and then you start roaming around under the table, under the dinner table, and trying to look up the skirt of, I forget who it was, who was dining there. But yeah, this kid, all signs point to this kid needing some serious psychological intervention and authority figures in his life, all of whom are absent. And this does not bode well for his future, whether it's these are not, again, the McDonald triad. These are other things. But this is a future sociopath, a current sociopath, who behavior will manifest itself in Maniac, Jason Voorhees, all these types of characters. Mm. And I was thinking, too, because killer kids creep me out, and one of the real-life criminal stories that has stayed with me for years was the killing of Jamie Bulger in Liverpool, who was a 2-year-old who was led into the forest and beaten to death by 2 10-year-olds. And these 10-year-olds are the youngest people ever to go on trial for murder in the UK. And looking into their dead eyes and seeing their mugshots as 10-year-olds, you can't... It's too young for them to have, I guess, developed, you know, the mindset to have been... Okay, maybe they were abused, but to be that... They're not fully formed beings, and yet they're dead-eyed sociopaths, and that I can't take. Whereas adults, you expect the worst from adults. Kids are innocent, right? And so this movie really did affect me, and this kid's performance. What's his name? Sammy Snyders?
The actor, yeah.
Yeah, it was an amazing performance. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was really invested in this up until the creatures came out, and it went all Creature from the Black Lagoon and whatever, what have you, you know? Yeah.
So now I know why I've never gone into ECE as a profession.
Oh, God, yeah. not a chance, yeah.
Well, I learned that in 1981, when this film was released, or, you know, 1980 when it's probably filmed, feminism was still a very...
Nascent.
Yeah. Because there's a point where Sandra drops a knife, and ever so gallantly and chivalrously, Jamie offers to pick it up, and she goes, no, I'll get it. That's very nice of you, Jamie, but women these days can do stuff for themselves. And, you know, good on her for standing up for feminism and saying, I can pick up my own knife.
Yeah.
That was a really bizarre scene.
That was really odd, yeah.
There's another little just non-sequitur piece of dialogue.
And also what we learned is how indefatigable this babysitter is. She's a grad student. She must really need the money. Because after you're spied on not once but twice and seen naked... You think after the first time you are done with that place, and that is it. Also, with dealing with a kid who's got clearly on the autism spectrum and has got this sociopathic tendencies, looking at a knife, his complete inability to relate to other kids, his solitude. At one point, he's painting like a fire truck, and as you mentioned, oh, don't you have any friends? Oh, I like being by myself. I get to do whatever.
And you talk to Daddy.
Yeah, yeah, and this enough would have me just running for the hills. There's no way. There's no. What are they paying this woman that they can keep her there?
Yeah, no. Just as soon as he said that, I started the Iron Maiden song started going through my head.
Yeah. And the dynamic, the babysitter dynamic, is much like a young teacher dynamic, and we've all been there with, like, the French teacher who's really, you know, fresh out of teacher's college, maybe 27 years old,
why
looking really good.
It's always the hot ones.
I don't know.
It's never, you know, the biology ones, or they are the applied, you know, trigonometry, what have you. It's always the French teachers that are hot. Yeah, mm-hmm. No, it's quite true. Voulez-vous coucher avec moi?
Yes.
Okay, so star rating then.
Oh, well, until the end, and had they gone and ran with the football, going towards the full psychosexual, psychological, picaresque coming of age, whatever you want happen to call it, this with this knave, this bizarre brat kid. If they had kept down that road, then this thing is going to be 4 for me. But since they went to that monster element, the last third, it detracted from it a bit. So I'm going to give it a solid 3. Very commendable. And again, shout out to Brian Collins, Horror Movie A Day, for writing this up and getting you to convince me to watch this.
Yeah, and I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to give it 3 as well. It's a ridiculous film. It's bizarre, it's wrong, but it's well worth seeing, well worth tracking down. I believe at this moment it is very difficult to find, but luckily we have a video store that we're able to procure these movies from. However, it will be re-released. I believe Kino Lorber is re-releasing it on Blu-ray sometime this year.
Nice.
So yeah, those that want to experience the sheer weirdness of the pit, won't be long now.
And check out our site, www.reallyawfulmovies.com, and of course, new episodes of our genre podcast, focusing primarily on horror, but covering a wide range of things. Every Friday, we upload new episodes, and follow us on Twitter, too. Send us some suggestions. We're happy to check out anything. Awful_movies, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Thank you.